Coming at you live from Camp Lake Bottom, where Summer Wonder goes to die. It's Cartoon Night in Canada.
Hey, what you watching?
Got a problem with cartoon?
Welcome to yet another episode of Cartoon Night in Canada, a nostalgic podcast where we dig through the animated past to find what cartoons made here in Canada are worth remembering. I am your co-host, Chris Lucy Antonio.
And I'm your co-host, Sylvie Kittles.
And Sylvie. Were you one of those kids who had a summer camp experience?
Kind of?
I never went to any form of summer camp, so I do not understand this apparently quintessential experience of coming of age. So please, educate me. What's it like?
I was a teen camp counselor at a Bible camp for 2 years.
Oh, you mentioned this before. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I wasn't even, super in charge. I was more or less, because I was only maybe 2 years older than the age of the age of majority of the kids. so I was more of a glorified babysitter.
Is that not all camp counselors?
I mean, yeah, but, I wasn't in charge. I wasn't really responsible if anyone got hurt.
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah, it was the best. I was basically a camper, but my parents didn't have to pay.
You also had, a form of strange camp diplomatic immunity where no charge could stand for you if anything happens to all the kids that you're taking care of.
Exactly, because I was also a minor.
What an ironclad defense.
Yeah. It's like, sir, I'm just a little guy.
Yeah, that holds up in court. That's right up there with, the Johnny Cochran... Glove does not fit, you must acquit defense.
Yeah.
Just say that in court. It's like, oh, we weren't prepared. The prosecution.
We weren't prepared for the little guy defense.
It's like, we have nothing prepared for that. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it was an little okay guy defense. It was a nice location. It was not run by a particularly culty church.
That's a plus, because
yeah, I mean it was more or less there were two cabins, one for boys, one for girls. There was the main building. It was originally built by Finlanders, so there was a sauna.
Ooh,
was
that's
a really
nice.
Nice wood burning sauna there.
Just as Jesus wanted.
Yeah. Sweat it out. That's my religion.
Man, I don't know why, but you say summer Bible camp, my skin immediately begins to crawl. Is it just because of that Jesus camp documentary?
It's gotta be that, yeah. I mean, yeah. any sort of place, any sort of religious themed summer camp does immediately raise some red flags, because you are potentially putting your kids in a field of indoctrination, and also it's the middle of nowhere. They can't leave.
You're cutting them off from
society. Yeah, some camps don't have they might not have phones. There might be a landline, but if it's the kind of camp that you should be worried about sending your kid to, they're probably not going to let the kid use the phone to call for help.
It's so much easier to hear the good gospel when you have absolutely no way of escaping or reaching the outside world. It
exactly.
Becomes so much more effective.
Yeah, I think when I was summer camp aged, when I would have been shipped off, it was more of I would do day camps in town.
Oh, okay. Actually, I was being a little untrue. I did do day camps, which is just babysitting, essentially, but yeah, more regimented under somebody, like under an actual kind of organization, not just somebody's house. So, yeah, I did that. That was my camp experience.
Yeah, I did, like a theater camp at the YMCA one year. Our local museum always had little summer things going on that my brother and I would do, usually, like, two every summer, because we were losers, and we were like, oh my god, this one is dinosaur-themed.
Hey, join the club. Me and my brother did a summer camp at the local pool and gymnasium, so that was just a guaranteed we got to swim every day. That's the only thing that we cared about. So yeah, that was all right. And hey, we lived in a two-income household, so my parents were working the entire summer. And without the schools open, nobody's there to take care of us and make sure we don't die.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what those day camps, that's even what summer camp is for. The idea of it is basically just, oh, the schools are not going to be taking care of your kids. Here's a place that will do that, and we're going to also pretend that we're educating them too.
Yeah, in a capitalist society, you don't have time for your children, even when they have time off.
Yeah.
Well, on that very sour note, I don't know, I'll just play we were talking about summer camp because it's the theme of the show we're talking about.
Yeah, can't play
bottom. Yeah, here it is. On this week's episode, brighten up those smile campers, because we are registering for Camp Lake Bottom, created by Eric Jacobson, no, not the Jim Henson puppeteer, some other guy named Eric Jacobson, and Betsy McGowan, who...
Disappointing. Disappointing.
I know, right? Saw that name on the official article for Camp Lake Bottom, wasn't hyperlinked, so I knew it was not the quote-unquote real Eric Jacobson, not this fraud. No disrespect. And Betsy McGowan, who...
Full disrespect. Why aren't you a Muppeteer?
It's hard. It's hard to become a Muppeteer. They train...
You do have to... I'm so sad. I'm, like, an inch too short to be a Muppeteer.
I like that you measured that out. You knew.
They have, like, they have very specific height requirements. And, like, you can be too short or too tall to work for the Muppets.
You heard it here first. The Jim Henson Company is discriminating based on height. How dare they?
It's because of their set regulations.
It's because they're heightist.
That's it.
There's only one perfect size for all Muppeteers. It's actually a form of eugenics. I don't know what I'm going with this.
Selective breeding for Muppet performers.
I am hungover, ladies and gentlemen, but anyway... Betsy McGowan, who is a key player in the Disney animated television renaissance of the 2010s, like, she has hands in most of, if not all, the major shows of the 2010s as, like, a creative consultant, executive producer. Look up her career. It's got a lot of heaters under her name, under her IMDb. The show was produced by Toronto-based Sky Rider Media Group, Ottawa-based Jamfield Entertainment, and our friends at Nine Story Media Group, making this show...
Supremely Canadian.
Purely Canadian.
Yeah.
None of that American influence in this Camp Lake Bottom. It is ours, goddammit. I don't know if I claim it. We'll get into it. The show aired on Teletoon in Canada and Disney XD in America between July 2013 and July 2017, lasting 3 seasons and 65 episodes. For the podcast today, neither of us had any experience with the show. It's a little past our time, but we're doing our due diligence. We chose randomly using our patented spinning wheel and selected episode 44A and 44B, Fright Club and Bottom Dome. written respectively by Evan Thaler Hickey and the team of Robert Pincombe and Shelley Hoffman, and directed respectively by Robert Walton and Silber Roca. Original air dates August 28th, 2015. Sylvie.
Yeah.
I have already said neither of us were particularly familiar with Camp Lake Bottom, but why did you feel the need to put it onto the docket this week? What jumped out about it?
I mean, it was kind of just one of those shows where it's been on our list for a while because it's a Canadian show, even though neither of us had ever watched it.
Yep.
And, you know, we just did a heavy hitter in being Ian. So I was thinking, well, we can't do the other big one. We can't do the massive one yet.
I guess not, no.
And that one is also summer camp themed.
So, yeah, you can slot it into that subgenre.
Yeah, so I was thinking about Total Drama, and then just, well, what about this other weird little summer camp show that I've never seen before? So that was it.
Yeah, that makes enough sense. I mean, the real thing that caught me about this show, when it was airing in 2015, I had already become in a living situation, between 2013 and 2017, I'd already become in a living situation where I didn't have cable and watched all forms of media through my laptop, so this one completely passed me by, had no idea what it was, but it's interesting. We could have held on to this both for some summer programming or our Spooktober celebration if we were to really like hold on to it. But I'm glad we're getting this out of the way because I'm curious about how we're both going to what are both like opinions of the show were, because I was a little overwhelmed, which is weird
extremely to say. Yeah, this is we can get into the nitty gritty more, but this is definitely it's a very hyperactive show. There's a lot going on all of the time.
It is appealing to a younger audience and a new younger audience than like the usual what we usually refer to for our generation of younger audience. Like, this is a show for like 8 to 11-year-olds who are very much who have had their attention span devastated by the ascent of all forms of internet technology. Like, this is never not prodding you with a flashy bit of animation, loud sounds, and just a cacophony of attention grabbing noise.
Yeah. We were saying earlier, this is absolutely a show that is kind of like designed to be cut into clips and then put onto TikTok with someone playing Subway Surfer underneath it.
Yeah, it feels like something you watch in passing while you are like while your attention is entirely divided, because I've never to be 100% real with everybody listening, we are two adults who watch shows made for kids for this podcast. And I've always been
30.
Yeah. Yes. Good God. And I've never had a moment where it's like, man, I feel really old watching these shows that we cover. I never felt that watching Being Ian. I never felt that watching Reboot. I never felt that watching even more contemporary shows like The Hollow. When I was watching Camp Lake Bottom, I immediately was struck by how old I was watching this show, and just the divide of what people want out of cartoons between this generation and my generation. It was a big, like, oh, this is just not for me. Like, for my age bracket, like, this is not something I could be able to watch with my kid if I had one. This is just noise. Cool.
Yeah, I definitely did obtain a new gray hair during the course of this episode.
We are getting old, Sylvie.
Yep.
These kids these days, with what they're watching.
Yeah, not to be all kids these days, but, like, Milo Murphy's Law, this is not.
I mean, it was airing at the same time, but, like, I'm a big fan of Gravity Falls. I love that show.
Yeah, like, there is absolutely media for children that is, like, being made now or being made in the 2010s that is absolutely high quality stuff. Like, this is, we will never be the kind of grouchy assholes going, like, you know, they're just not making cartoons the way they used to.
No, I'm like, my point is specifically, it's like, this just feels very overstimulating for my old brain. Like, this is just,
yep.
Like, this is fine for the current generation who needs this much, who needs this very, like, wacky, hyperactive comedy for them to fill those 10 minutes. Like, it does a lot in 10 minutes. Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, this
They do feel longer than 10 minutes, just in terms of the bulk of things that are happening, jokes that are being made, plots, because everything is going at breakneck speed.
Yeah, this just kind of gave me a headache. No, and that's not even the fault of the show. It's just, this is so not for either of us.
Yeah, no, it's just by design.
Yeah, yeah. But just, we're talking around it, so let's talk a little bit about the show's aesthetic before we break into the plot. This is, I felt this was like fairly typical of what the Disney XD television style of the time. But as we have been saying, like, the animation is pretty on point considering just how fluid and rapid it can be. This is like kind of classic, this is like classic Merry Melodies fast motion, Bob Clampett style almost.
Yeah, just things always perpetually going on.
Yeah,
like
overstimulating.
It is. Yeah. In this case, it's very, like you were saying, the kind of what a lot of Disney XD shows were looked like at the time, where it's your thick outlines, kind of painterly backgrounds, noodle-armed characters,
yep, big one.
Classics.
Very stringy character designs.
Yeah. Everyone's kind of just like a tube.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I wouldn't be shocked if, those people who are perpetually wrong about this criticism, like, if this was also folded into the Cal Art style bullshit.
Oh, God, but it's so not.
It's not, but I can see where they might, because they're always wrong. They don't know at all what they're talking about. Yeah. But, like, I can see them attempting to fold this into it because it's very reminiscent, like, with its aesthetic to what, the other kind of line, the lineup of Disney XD at the time. Like, of where Disney's television initiative was going.
I don't know why it's making me think of Big City Greens. Because it doesn't look anything like Big City Greens.
I think you just wanted to think about Big City Greens.
I mean, who doesn't?
Yeah, yeah, no, it's that's a good show. Like, I've no complaints there, but yeah, this is just another example of the very simple character design with recognizable outlines and very thick black lines around every character design that just really allows their movement to pop, especially when, for the episodes at least that we watch, they're moving very, very quickly.
Yeah, these are really, I think that's probably the benefit of, like, noodle characters is that you can kind of flop them around as much as you want to. They're the kinds of characters that, like, it's kind of easy to throw them around like stuffed animals.
Exactly, yeah. It's just, it's how you kind of court the audience that they're going for. It's just, at any moment, these characters could just bounce off of the frame and just go completely batshit.
It's kind of an animation, like, design style that emulates play.
Hmm. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, in a way that, like, the same way that kids, in the same way that, like, a kid playing is gonna spend a lot of time going, like, okay, and then, or, and what if now, there's a guy with a hook for a hand and we're running, or what if now, there's like a tentacle monster. Like, it's got that kind of unhinged energy, playful energy to it.
Sugar Rush. It is Sugar Rush writing. It is it is appealing to a very divided attention span by just bombarding them with noise and motion. And you know what? That's there's a talent behind that. Like, this.
Absolutely.
From what I can tell, this show was quite popular at the time. I mean, even I never like to do this, but the fact that a fully Canadian produced show was able to like share broadcasting time with like some of the most popular and major Disney cartoons, like Disney television cartoons of the past 10 years. I don't know. There's a bit of a fun instance there that we snuck one in there.
Yeah, we got pulled one over on them.
Yeah, take that, Mickey, you bastard. Again, hungover. Sorry. So yeah, what exactly is this Camp Lake Bottom all about? Would I want to send my kids there?
You probably not.
So it's like a Camp Krusty.
Kind of.
That's a reference for my generation, kids. It's a Simpsons. Look it up.
So I also did double back and watch the pilot because I definitely felt like I was missing something with these episodes.
Yeah.
So Camp Lake Bottom is about our three protagonists, McGee, Gretchen, and Squirt, who get on the bus for the wrong summer camp by mistake. They were all supposed to go to Camp Sunny Smiles. McGee with his older sister Susie.
Sure.
Susie. Yep. And she like intentionally makes him get on the other bus, and so they end up, instead of going to Camp Sunny Smiles, they go to Camp Lake Bottom, which is this rundown camp, constantly under a maelstrom cloud that is run by a zombie, a Sasquatch, and Rosebud. I don't know what her deal is. She's just kind of there.
Yeah, concept, they had a million-dollar idea and they didn't realize it. They should have just done Camp Cryptid.
Right? Like, the kind of running plot, I guess, is that because the kids initially wanted to escape Camp Lake Bottom to go to Camp Sunny Smiles, and then when they got there and they saw just all the snobby rich assholes who were there, they were like, actually, you know what? We prefer our shit heap.
Yeah,
camp. We embrace being the weird kids. We want to go to this camp run by a literal zombie with a hook for a hand.
We want to spend our summer at this decrepit, creepy, filthy, and potentially dangerous summer camp that our parents absolutely do not know that we are at.
Yeah, because again, no phones.
It's a
solid setup.
Yeah, I was about to say that, like, a solid premise.
Yeah, these three kids who are definitively outsiders in their peer groups, embracing their own weirdness and hanging out with monsters for a summer.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's honestly, if they leaned more into the horror and we could have had this just being like what I was assuming, like, of a Camp Cryptid, where everything is revolving around just how scary and unnerving that this summer camp is, I think this would have been, it wouldn't appeal to the same audience, but I think it would have been stronger for it. But this is okay. They're obviously dealing with a very specific mandate, and you've been saying beforehand, before we started recording, that you're getting late Phineas and Ferb vibes from, at least from the episode that we watched.
Yeah, I have a theory that this is just so, because late stage Phineas and Ferb was they kind of stopped adhering to formula every single time. Like, that was the early seasons of Phineas and Ferb were extremely structured. Like, there always had to be rules. And then as they got further and further away, they started just having more one-shot AUs where they were like, hey, well, what if instead of doing a regular episode, we did, like, an Avengers episode Just because.
Fucking throw it at the wall, see what sticks. Who cares? We're past the point where we're trying to connect every episode anymore. Just have fun with it.
Yeah, we're just gonna do a weird one.
Which I appreciate, honestly. I like that energy added to like late stage television series where they just don't like, not that they don't care anymore. It's like we've always just wanted to do a full parody of this movie we like. Let's just do it.
Yeah. Let's just do that. And I think in this case, because one of the episodes that we watched today is just a full parody of a movie.
Yeah.
You and I, as audience members, have not earned that and that energy. Like,
we're so out of touch with the lore of Camp Lake Bottom that it taking a massive diversion into parody territory, it doesn't hit the same.
Well, it's just we don't already have a any kind of rapport with the characters or the story, such as it is. So, like, when we're seeing McGee and Gretchen and Squirt doing Mad Max, it's like we're not really getting the, like, these are not characters that we've already been hanging around with and we enjoy having a silly, goofy, good time. Because if we knew the characters and we liked them, then them having silly, goofy, good time is also us as audience members having a silly, goofy, good time. But when this is our first foray into the show, it's just kind of like, oh, we're doing Mad Max. Okay.
So you're saying that the show rewards its viewership for their years of committed watching of the previous seasons. Like, now, like, this hits different if you have been following the arcs of Squirt, Gretchen, and McGee, and now we can see them, these strongly built characters, in a completely different setting, and wow, the antics.
I don't think it would be, it's like that. I think it's truly just, we don't know who these characters are.
Oh yeah, like,
so seeing them doing a full movie parody, like, we don't know how they are in their, like, vanilla state.
It's the Chuck Jones quote. It's like, yeah, all I need for a cartoon is just Daffy Duck on a ship and it writes itself.
Yeah.
Just slot these characters into something and it's like, oh yeah, we can do Mad Max like a parody. We can do whatever literature that we've been reading and just like, yeah, throw them into a Prince and the Pauper situation. It writes itself. We know exactly where these characters go. Yeah. Yeah. I see what you're saying. I've always been curious about these shows that take place at camp that go longer than, say, like 2-3 seasons, because you're building into the show itself, the concept of the show, a time limit. Summer's not that long.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even again, Phineas and Ferb takes place over the course of a single summer vacation.
Yeah, this endless summer trope. I've always been a fan of it. Like, I've always liked a show that takes place at summer and it's so unspecific with the actual time frame that you just feel like you're in a purgatory of good times with these characters.
Yeah. Or even, Gravity Falls also takes place over the course of the summer.
Wow.
And, yeah.
So that was popular at the time.
Yeah, just setting your show during summer vacation and then just making it feel like an eternity. I mean, that is kind of like, that's how summer vacation feels when you're a child.
Yeah.
It does feel like a lot longer than 2 months.
Yeah, you're just holding on to that time, and that's probably why it's so relatable. At least to the kids.
I mean, there is, yeah, I mean, even literally, like, time, you do start to experience time faster and faster as you age.
Oh, that's a scary thought.
Yeah, your brain literally starts, ignoring the boring parts.
Oh. Huh.
Yeah, so like as a child, dead air time, you feel that because your brain hasn't learned to skip it.
So it makes sense why this show is the way it is.
Yeah, so like as a child, you are experiencing time as a lot longer, and so why wouldn't this show that takes place over summer vacation be hundreds and hundreds of episodes long, right?
And why wouldn't every one of those episodes just grab you and shake you and say, no, don't look away, don't look away, look what we're doing, keep going.
The keys! We got the keys!
It is a jangly key show. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, we've definitely done key janglers before.
Key janglers, I like that.
There we go.
Can we just call it, like, we know what we're talking about when we say key janglers, so it's like, yeah, that show's a real key jangler.
Well, that there show's a real key jangler there.
I like how, it's a folksy animation criticism, it's good.
I wouldn't even say it's a criticism, that's just exactly what it is.
Like, oh yeah, I watched a bunch of key janglers in my time.
So the format, I really like the opening format of each and every one of these episodes. Is you kind of get a little blurb from McGee, like writing a postcard to his parents.
Yeah, it's a cute little touch. I always appreciate a couch gag style switch up for every episode.
Yeah, what's that? What's that song?
What song?
There's like the
Photograph by Nickelback.
Da 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 da. Yeah, there's a song, like an old novelty song called Hello Mother, Hello Father, and it's a letter from camp.
Oh, that's,
Camp Granada.
Granada.
It just gives me that vibe.
That's literally only a reference, I don't know why I'm talking about Simpsons so much, but that's only a reference I know from The Simpsons.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like, that was never a novelty hit in my household growing up, but... You don't have the experience, you didn't watch a lot of The Simpsons, but you absorb so much very specific culture, pop culture, from The Simpsons.
Like, I mean, I had a high school English teacher for many, many years, and he was so obsessed with The Simpsons, so basically every single thing that we ever touched on in class probably had a Simpsons parody episode, and yep. If it did, he would let us watch it. That'd be the thing. Like, we're gonna watch a Streetcar Named Marge,
or
without fail, he loved nothing more than a Simpsons, good old Simpsons refo.
Yeah, like, just how it colors everything of your experience of culture just by being a Simpsons fan. It's so bizarre. Like, why do I know who Eudora Welty is? Because of The Simpsons. I mean, yeah, like, fantastic writer, apparently, but I don't know. I just knew it as a one-off joke in The Simpsons.
Yeah, and now Camp Granada.
And
can add to the list.
Camp Granada, yeah. It's a good point, though. You do get the same kind of novelty hit, like, repetitive rhyming structure for this show as well.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we got two little minisodes here. So what happens in the first one, Fright Club?
So in Fright Club, there is a power outage at the camp, so all camp activities have been canceled. We really fucked up with picking episodes because we do not have a normal, like, day at camp episode in either half.
We don't see anybody. I'm assuming that these are the, from watching these episodes, these three characters are the only registered campers of Camp Lake Bottom.
Correct. They're not even registered because they were supposed to go to Camp Sunny Smiles.
True.
On the wrong bus.
But it's like, this is a completely empty camp, and it is just these three fucking around in the dark telling scary stories.
Yeah.
So it's like, wow, we're missing a lot of context.
I also forgot to say because I watched the pilot. The other reason they decide to stay is that the zombie and the Sasquatch get really sad at the thought of them leaving, and they kind of, like, accidentally guilt these kids into staying.
Hey, man.
They're like, oh, we just wanted to have campers, but we understand that no one would ever willingly choose to stay with us because we're monsters. And the kids are like, ah, fucking fine.
No. You leave. You got out. To leave the zombie and Sasquatch to their own devices. You could die.
It's weird that they are really hung up on running a summer camp. But honestly, I do like the I guess camp counselors. Armand is the Sasquatch and Sawyer is the zombie. But yeah, we don't really get to see a whole lot of either of them in these episodes.
Not at all. We get a lot of Armand in the second episode, and in any other era, this would be bordering on a gay stereotype, but in...
It's getting close.
It's getting very close, because... But he just has a very specific interest in being a little foppish and being artsy, and...
Yeah, I mean, he's basically Frasier.
Yes, if the Sasquatch, if Bigfoot was Frasier, yes, this is, yep, hit the nail on the head, that's great.
So the first episode of Fright Club, there's a power outage, camp activities are canceled, Sawyer gives the kids a spooky skull flashlight, and, leaves them to their own devices, so they decide to have a contest to see who can tell the scariest story. And the flashlight accidentally makes the spooky stories come true, and luckily all three of them decide to stick with a singular enemy. They invent this character, the Dripper.
Right. It's playing off like the hook-handed urban legend.
Carman Hook Hard.
Yes. Yes.
Hook Hard Door.
Yes, exactly.
And... Sweaty.
Yeah, but with this Fright Club episode, this is where I really was assuming that we maybe should have saved this show for October, because I thought like almost all the episodes were going to be like this, like heavily horror themed. They're basically doing the who is it? It's like the Byron Horror Story Contest.
Yeah,
it's almost a reference to that, but the whole gimmick here is that each of the characters has their own little story about the Dripper, and is done in a slightly different style and tone. And
I must say, Gretchen's is genuinely horrifying.
A lot of gross out humor in this show.
It's so effective.
It's for young kids, and I get it, but... Ooh, another thing that just made me feel older. It's like, yeah, I could see myself laughing at that if I were five.
That the shot of, like, Squirt rubbing his feet along the carpet that has McGee's fingernail clippings just everywhere, like, I had a visceral reaction.
Yeah, this plot is a little all over the place. They just kind of wanted to do a style parody anthology where one's doing a very one's doing a hyper pop, like My Little Pony style telling of events. The other one's doing an almost classic 1940s horror film style of events. And the other is doing a samurai film parody for literally no reason.
Yeah,
all over the place. The chaotic energy of this show
doesn't fit. Yeah, see, I think McGee's probably should have been like some schlocky 70s horror, like Grindhouse.
Yeah, like maybe it fits with the character. Maybe like that's what his character is all about. That's how he would tell a story where he interacts with the Dripper. But either way, this the chaotic energy makes it just feel so overwhelming, to the point where after each of the characters told their stories, I was shocked and a little nauseated that there's still 5 minutes left of the episode itself.
It's like, oh god,
it
there's
does
more.
So much.
The flashlight brings the Dripper into their reality. And they kind of realize that however unintentionally, they didn't really create a monster. They just made an old man with a cold, and they've been bullying him.
It's a terrible OC.
Yeah, like three out of ten. This is a D minus.
Yeah,
OC.
I'm not gonna use the Dripper for my fic. I know that much. Can keep it.
This is my original OG, OC, Do Not Steal. Don't have to worry.
Wasn't planning
about that
on it.
I don't want him.
This episode specifically, this minisode didn't really click with me because my expectations for it were not really met, because I was assuming it would be more horror themed. That's my own fault. And then I was immediately struck just by how overstimulating and how hyperactive it is, and just had to take a break afterwards.
I
sound so old saying, like, oh man, this show was too much for me, but, like, it's a lot. It gave me a headache.
Yeah, there is a lot going on all of the time.
Kids these days are stronger than me. Cause they can watch this and not even bat an eye. It's like, wow.
Yeah, and they're like, what? That's normal.
This is how all cartoons run, right? This is the clip that life goes at. It's like, oof. These Zoomers. Swear to God. Anything left to say about the first episode? Any good jokes to pull?
No, it was really just the fingernail thing that stuck with me.
Your visceral reaction to...
Yeah, because holy fuck.
Yeah, it's so effective.
And then he started eating the... God, no, please, just no.
Right, he started eating the fingernails there.
And, like, when he... I think he says, like, oh, they're chewy and crunchy. It's like, ugh.
God damn it, Squirt. Get a fucking clue, dude.
Get it together.
Yeah, Squirt is also bordering on potential weird stereotype.
Yeah, he's getting there. I think a lot of the characters, they're just kind of dancing around. It's like, it's not... They're not really harmful stereotypes.
Not at all, but it's... I'm saying if this was... if this show was airing in another... era, if this was like being produced 10 years ago, they would absolutely be played for gay jokes. And 100%. It's not here. It's all very innocent, which is good.
It's just normal cartoon character antics.
Also, kids are gay. Kids can be gay. Like, it happens.
Yeah.
Anyway, the piece de resistance of this double feature is the second
Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, right?
It is literally just Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, which is interesting that of all the Mad Max movies that were out at the time, 2015, we were still before Fury Road. We haven't hit that high watermark. Yeah, 2016.
Oh shit, you're right.
Yeah, we haven't hit that high watermark for the series, but for all the films to parody, you chose Beyond Thunderdome. That's a choice.
It's a weird pull.
It's maybe because that movie is the most family friendly. They legitimately tried, because Mad Max and Road Warrior are both hard R's, because George Miller is a wonderful man. A wonderful creative man who is able to amass a very talented crew for every batshit insane film that he is allowed to make. Mm-hmm. Still excited for Furiosa.
Oh yeah.
But
that's gonna be a damn good time.
Yeah, but for Beyond Thunderdome specifically, they tried to court a younger and more like all ages audience. So that one was PG-13 and involved a Tina Turner as this character, the entity or lady entity, auntie entity, who is trying to save a bunch of kids in an abandoned Boeing Airjet that crashed.
That's kind of on the nose.
Yeah, and the Thunderdome of the film is essentially a big bouncy playpen with weapons where everyone is bungeed together and they bounce around a cage and they hit each other every now and then. It's really silly. It is a very silly movie.
All right.
Yeah. Pert prime for a parody, I guess.
I guess so. I mean, in this case, honestly, there's a little more grit to the Camp Lake Bottom version, because they do put a zombie with an electrified helmet in it with a chainsaw.
Yeah,
in the dome.
I will say, even for that first episode, Fright Club, I was genuinely surprised by how much mortal peril these kids get into.
Oh yeah, they are pretty regularly threatened with bodily harm and or death.
Oh, the number of times the trio were almost stabbed by the Dripper, I was like, wow, okay, this... I had assumed, just based on the tone and the aesthetic, that this is for very young children, but that's kind of harrowing.
Yeah, I think...
Real violence is on the table.
I think that's the thing that... some cartoon writers have kind of realized is that kids are pretty chill with the possibility of death.
Yeah, they finally figured that out.
As long as you don't
actually kill anyone. Yeah.
They were like, no, you can absolutely show characters in mortal peril, but as long as everything works out in the end, kids are fine.
And when you couch it or wrap it around in this very silly and unserious tone that is so rapid fire anyway, you can have a little potential death scene here and there and it'll be fine.
Yeah.
Because the next scene's coming in like the next half second, so it doesn't matter.
Teach your kids about mortality today.
Yes, that is the takeaway from Camp Lake Bottom. If I were to watch this with my if I were to watch the show with my hypothetical children, that's what I would sit them down afterwards. Like, and what did we learn today? You could die at any moment.
Any time.
Yeah. Good job.
None of us are promised tomorrow.
Yeah. Thank God. I'm glad that you were paying attention. I'll see you in a week.
Oh, you're only seeing your kids once a week.
I'm divorced, probably. In this scenario that I'm envisioning, I am heavily divorced. But I make an effort.
You've got... I feel like you'd be a girl dad.
I would be a girl dad, wouldn't I? Yeah. Yeah, I would. Anyway, so with this parody of Beyond Thunderdome, it's taking our three characters, where McGee is the Max Rockinstansky character, and the rest are just denizens of this post-apocalyptic wasteland. This was a real big, not culture shock, what is the word I'm looking for? Still very hungover. Gear shift from the first episode.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, we're just doing full movie parodies. Okay.
Yeah, this is just fully, okay, we're switching gears. Okay.
Yeah, I did not know that was on table. Switching gears, thank you, that's what I was looking for.
Yeah, it's a very, very different vibe that we're getting, and was not expecting it. I was kind of expecting it to be more of, like, based on the title, I kind of thought it would be an opportunity to showcase, like, the competitive nature between, like, the weirdos of Camp Lake Bottom and the rich snobs of Camp Sunny Smiles. Yeah. I was not expecting that to be couched in a Mad Max parody.
I assume it's like just a constant thing that pops up every now and then when they need a good versus episode between the two camps. I assume that Susie and whatever the other kid's name is are the constant foils.
Yes, his name is Jordan Buttsquat.
Show for children.
Yes.
Whatever, that's fine.
Yeah, good on you. He's rich and she's a snob, and so that's our... I guess that's our dynamic.
It's fine. Totally fine.
I mean, that's some pretty classic sibling bullshit.
Oh, yeah.
I could absolutely see real siblings being like, oh, you want this compass because it'll show you the way to the most cool summer camp ever? This is mine now. I've decided.
Yeah. I was a little impressed by how committed they are to this post-apocalyptic Mad Max bit. I think it comes off pretty well. Like I think they got the look of the series. They got the minutiae and little elements of the Mad Max world. I like how they adapt it from Camp Lake Bottom and they blend it in very naturally. Like, instead of Max's signature sawed-off shotgun, it's just McGee's signature, I guess, umbrella, but now it looks like a gun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like those little cute touches.
Both episodes feature umbrellas.
Weird.
As a major prop.
That's why you put them together. That's just good programming. And this is the second episode of Cartoon Titan Canada in a row where we are doing a full-on movie parody episode.
Oh god, yeah.
Fun times.
This time it wasn't even on purpose.
No, this was fully decided by a random wheel, because we don't know this show.
But yeah, this is, I think I would have preferred a more, like, quote-unquote normal episode.
Maybe.
I would have really liked to see if there were any sort of, episodes where it's just, we're at camp and here are some weird things that happen at this camp.
Maybe that's all located in, like, the first season, and then afterwards, what you were saying with the, late-stage Phineas and Ferb syndrome. Like, yeah.
Where it's like, oh, okay, we're just gonna go do some bonkers shit now.
Turns out we can't do too many, camp-related shows, so we're just gonna pad it out with a couple of movie parodies and fantasy sequences. Whatever. We're Camp Lake Bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah, honestly, I liked the second episode more than the first. I thought it a lot more was going on, and weirdly, couching it in this Mad Max parody, I was a lot more accepting of its off-the-wall frenetic style.
Yeah, I think the energy of the show worked better in doing parody, yeah. Oddly enough.
Yeah, weird. I don't know exactly why, but I was weirdly a lot more forgiving of its non-stop roller coaster style than with the first one. I don't know.
Well, I think especially in that case, it's because you have this knowledge that they are cramming the plot of, like, a 2-hour movie into 11 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. And for that, they do a pretty decent job.
Yeah, there's a lot of ground to cover.
Yeah, I wonder, like, this is just another one of those things, like, for the present audience of 2013 and 2017... A Beyond Thunderdome parody does not play at fucking all, but that's clearly just the people on the staff in the writer's room wanting to do a Beyond Thunderdome parody and just saying, fuck it, we're doing a Beyond Thunderdome parody.
That's just a thing that I think a lot of cartoon writers do, is just parody things that they like.
It's why we have that one episode of Disney's Recess, to keep it within the Disney world, where it's just a full-on Rashomon parody.
Yeah, because why the fuck not?
Like, who does that play for other than me, after getting a film education and returning to that episode? It's like, oh my god, they did a Rashomon episode. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Love that. Any parting thoughts on this second episode before we get into the cast?
It's an alright time.
Yeah. Better than the first. Okay, who are our main trio?
Alright, our main trio are all pretty solid mainstays.
Noted names, yep.
Yeah, as our leading lad McGee, we've got Scott McCord.
Scott McCord, please put the helium down.
Like, just, helium is a limited resource. We need it.
Like, his performance is very hyperactive, as you would assume with the show, but...
Everyone's is.
He is climbing to an almost grating register with this high-pitched squonking he's doing.
This is absolutely a kind of performance that's just like, you just gotta go. You just gotta go.
Oh, you're in every episode? I can't watch too much of this at one point. Sorry, kids.
Definitely, I hope you had a lot of water in between sessions, because this seems like the kind of voice that would absolutely destroy your vocal cords after doing it for too long.
Oh, dear God, I couldn't even imagine. Mad respect to all, if it hasn't come across, like, mad respect to all voice actors we've talked about and your titanium-infused vocal cords. Weirdly, Scott McCord is a big name, but I don't think we really covered him on anything.
Well, he's the lead in Beyblade.
Yes. Or Bakugan.
Bakugan Battle Brawlers. Yes, okay. Yeah, so, like, we've
yes, okay, we have
we've been here.
We've caught him up before. And
he's also the fucking cop dog in Paw Patrol. So.
Wonderful. Show we don't have to cover, thankfully. I gave you your pulpit for Darren Aronofsky. If I were to give you one for Paw Patrol, we'd be here for 3 hours.
hey, that would be a team effort.
Oh, I join in. I would join in. Don't worry. You're not railing against it by yourself. So what about the other two? The sidekicks to McGee here.
So as Gretchen, we've got Melissa Altro, who her other biggest role would probably be Pippi Longstocking.
Oh wow, that's on the docket, right?
Oh, absolutely, it is.
Yeah, that's gonna be an interesting one.
But yeah, she's another voice actor who's just kind of, she's been around forever.
Didn't mind her performance at all.
Yeah, I mean it fit. I really like, I think of the three, Gretchen is absolutely my favorite of the main trio, because she's the one who's the most like, I'm. She's the one who's most likely to deliver Jughead's "I'm weird" speech.
There you go. Thank you for taking it somewhere where I can understand. Now I love this character.
Exactly.
No, but if you really want to see like her performance as this character really highlighted, just look to that second story in that first episode. She's going to an 11 in it, and it's pretty great.
Yeah. Yeah, she really gets to let her freak flag fly.
I never try and say that. It's so weird. I always struggle with that.
It's a dangerous tongue twister.
And I guess we should also mention that her other big claim to fame is being Muffy on Arthur.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Again, future episode.
And I'm just finding out, apparently there's an Arthur podcast.
What?
Yeah, the Arthur podcast. Started in 2022, so... Look at that. Oh, shit, that makes, like, Arthur our competition.
Oh, fuck. I just wanted to see who... Because the thing about a long-running show like Arthur is that, like, the cast has changed so much. Yeah, she held on to the role of Muffy for the entire run of the show.
Hella resids from that one. So many residual checks from that show. Hopefully she is well taken care of.
Like, most other characters have had actor switches. Specifically, Arthur and DW have both had, like, 7 actors between them.
I mean, last week we talked about one of the actors who played DW.
Yes.
Just one of them. Yeah. And, like, I think they only had 40 episodes to their name.
Melissa was Muffy Crosswire for 96 to 2022.
Muffy Crosswire also sounds like a decent stripper name. No, drag name. A drag name.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, somebody steal that. Any drag artist who may or may not listen, take the name Muffy Crosswire.
Yeah, she held onto that role for 26 years.
Fucking hell. 2.5 decades of Arthur. 2.5 decades of steady employment on the biggest PBS show of all time. Good God.
Good for you, Melissa.
Yeah, yeah. And as our big lovable idiot.
So yeah, a squirt we've got. This is our, like, comedian poll, is Darren Frost.
You're right. This is one of those examples.
Yeah, so he's, I think he's got a stand-up career.
I wouldn't be surprised. This is someone who's absolutely better known for just being a journeyman actor who's taking parts wherever they can get. And a lot of those parts just happen to be in cartoons.
Yeah, I really love that his IMDb page is, like, he's known for being the cameraman in Hairspray, because, yeah, they were like, yeah, he was in Hairspray, I was like, yeah, he was that cameraman!
Oh, it's a notable, okay.
Like, it's such a minor role, but yeah, he's got a very recognizable face.
I have not seen Hairspray in a while, I might be due for a rewatch. That and the original John Waters.
I mean, always.
Yeah, I have a weird soft spot for that movie. Maybe because I just like, a big budget musical that's based off a John Waters movie. Sure. Let me at it.
Fuck yeah. What cracks me up about that movie is how my mom loves it. She is very uncomfortable with John Travolta as the mom.
Because it's too convincing? It's too earnest and sweet.
Yeah, because is she what bugs her is how in love Chris Walken is.
Oh no, that was one
he
of those.
He commits so hard to that's my wife and I love her.
That was one of those moments where it's like both you forget sometimes just because they chose a lot of bad projects, but Travolta is a phenomenal actor when they want to be and when they pick the right role that can really bring something out of them, like, ooh. And playing off of Walken too, God, that
they're such a good duo.
I really like that relationship. It's weird. I really, really enjoy that dynamic between the two. Anyway, Darren Frost performance. I like it.
Yeah.
It's
definitely one of those, like, he understood the assignment.
Yeah, it's a lot, and it has to be a lot.
Yeah, everyone has to be a lot.
Yeah. No real thing, nothing to say about it. He does get the most comedic lines, I feel, because he just feels like in a show of zany characters, he's the zaniest.
Yeah, he's the weirdo among weirdos.
The slightly effeminate weirdo among weirdos. And yeah, I don't have much to say about this whole performance. It's fine. It fits the bill. Yeah. Understood the assignment. Yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, I also just pulled for the second episode. I did pull Armand's actor, Adrian Truss.
We can go through that real quick. Sure.
Yeah, he is a returning name to this show. He was Poe in Ruby Bloom.
Oh, there you go. And just like in that show, he's having a lot of fun here.
Yeah, he's this is another like journeyman voice actor who's kind of just being given this very campy role.
And he just pulled a voice out of his voice Rolodex, like, this will fit.
Yeah, this is my Frasier voice.
I know it's this.
This is my West Coast elite
highfalutin Sasquatch voice. I
mean, he's basically Harry the Werewolf from Scary Godmother,
yes,
right?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Cut from the same cloth. There.
They're also bitter exes.
Yep. I like it. I like this extended universe you have now been committed to writing. Specifically just around Harry and Armand.
Armand. That's why Armand is in the middle of the woods. It's like he cannot go back to the fright side.
Oh, there you go. Oh man. I'm still just really hung up on like Sasquatch Frasier. I want that. I don't know what that would look like other than like what we're seeing here, but I want that show of it's Frasier, still set in Seattle, but he's a Bigfoot.
Well, yeah, because it's in the Pacific Northwest, so.
There you go. Yeah, perfect. It's greenlit now. Yeah, they brought Frasier back recently for Paramount Plus, and they didn't realize that, no, we are cryptid crazy right now. Make him a Sasquatch.
Okay, nobody's done it already. I just Googled Sasquatch Frasier just to see if anyone was already one step ahead
of that us. That is a TM of Cartoon Night in Canada. There will be merch of Sasquatch Frasier. Don't worry. Beloved character Sasquatch Frasier.
Get on that now. I just want the Sasquatch with, like, Frasier's big headphones.
Big headphones, yep. Somebody draws Sasquatch Frasier putting up the "You're fired," and then it's Merith just putting up "I'm Union."
Yeah.
Perfect.
Is it the zombie who's saying "I'm Union," or no? It's the cook.
Yes,
Rosebud.
There you go. Make it Rosebud putting up
"I'm
Union." We're commissioning fan art of Sasquatch Frasier. So fucking stupid. I love it.
I'll pay for it.
What were we talking about? Yeah, fun performance.
And Susie is played by Bryn McCauley, who's also a
big name,
returning name. Yeah,
yeah. Big name. You heard her do this voice before. It's perfectly fine. I like her. I like her little villain character.
She was genuinely. I was a little surprised that it was Bryn because there was definitely a moment where I was like, is that Kari Wahlgren?
Hmm, okay, I could see it.
Because It's a stellar performance. We love a bratty villain. Yeah,
it's a perfect trope. Going around, making the rounds at the time, but that's fine.
Yeah.
It fits, especially with this camp setting. You need something like that. You need a snobs versus slobs dynamic.
Absolutely. Like, when you've decided to make a summer camp of misfits your protagonists, like, it's gotta be prep school snobs.
Yeah, you're having it both ways. You're doing the raunchy 80s comedy dynamic as well as the horror film dynamic, where there is a rival camp where our beliefs and our worldviews do not match, and we absolutely hate them, but also we're in the woods and it's scary.
Yeah.
Best of both worlds.
It's a good time.
Any parting thoughts for Camp Lake Bottom?
It has fan fiction.
Oh, please.
There's a lot of it.
Okay.
Not a lot. 20. There's more than what we usually get.
Oh, wonderful. The Camp Lake Bottom fandom is alive and well.
Some of them are, like, crossovers with other shows that were popular at the time.
Of course.
Like, we got some My Little Pony. We got We've got just some genuine, like, I'm gonna write these characters having an adventure.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
It has a small but thriving community.
Maybe one day someone will write the big crossover event where it's like Total Drama Island, Camp Lake Bottom, the raccoons for some reason, Camp Laszlo, just a camp fic universe.
Someone should
get on
it. Someone should do that. Yeah.
We're commissioning two things this week.
Sasquatch Frasier.
Sasquatch Frasier. We would very much like everybody to realize the amazing character we just invented.
I mean, we didn't invent him though. That's just Armand.
That is our original OC. Original OC. Yeah, that's redundant. Do not steal.
Uh-huh.
I know it's based off Armin and also based off a character named Frasier that was on network television, but this is ours. Totally unique. Sasquatch Frasier, original character of Cartoon Night in Canada.
Yeah.
TM. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Cartoon Night in Canada. If you like what you heard, please consider giving us a like, share, review, and subscribe on your podcatcher of choice, preferably Apple Podcasts, because that helps us reach the widest possible audience. You can find the show on Twitter at Cartoon Night Pod, where we post new episodes every Saturday.
Except when we don't.
You can guarantee that. You can find myself on Twitter at Cinema Creep, where I'm entering my 30s in a tweet storm of telling everybody what I really feel about them. You're all great.
And you can find me at Sylvie Skeletons, where, I mean, I'm going to be real. I'm probably just going to be talking about my baby girl, Chilchuck.
As is your wont.
This 29-year-old divorced dad of three is not avoiding the baby girl accusations.
I can relate. Well, no, I can't, because I'm older than them. God. Goodbye, everybody.